Welcome to Pseudo Chat, the podcast from the Penn Manor Student Help Desk, recorded by Isaac Lewis and Mitch Haig, covering tech news in open source and education.
Welcome to this week's installment of Pseudo Chat.
God, that sounds good. We actually named our podcast now.
Yes, the formerly unnamed podcast. No longer generic brand, Aldi podcast. We are now
Pseudo Chat.
Dude, that was awesome.
we should use...
From now on, we're going to record our entire podcasts with echoes.
Yes, we're going to go to...
The whole thing.
We're going to go to a football arena and just shout the podcast, an empty arena. No, like a basketball court or something like that.
Yeah, a stone room. Anyway, we could go off course.
We can move on to a much less light topic.
Yeah, a little bit grim, sorry to say, but we'll lighten up when we're talking about the actual situation itself. We introduced the topic at the end of last week as kind of a teaser for what we plan to be doing today, but today is mainly focused on the 2015 San Bernardino attack, which was a shooting in San Bernardino just east of L.A.
So that's California.
Yes.
To those who don't know.
Yeah. Do we have overseas viewers or listeners?
Who knows? I mean, people listen to this. People check out our website from all across the globe. I don't know about actual podcast listeners, but foreign listeners, welcome.
Pseudo Chat worldwide.
Yes. We can, in a couple of years, we'll begin our Pseudo Chat conference, PseudoCon.
Anyway, breaking it down, what happened was we have two terrorists who were taken down by police at the end of the whole ordeal, but unfortunately, I believe it was 14 people that were killed in the attack, and countless more that were injured throughout the whole thing. But in the end, justice was served, we're happy to say. But that is far from over, and this whole situation is still escalating, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, there's a major, obviously for the past couple months since this attack, there's been a major investigation, and events are still unfolding on a pretty noteworthy scale, so let's get into it.
So what's going on is the FBI came to obtain one of the iPhones of one of the terrorists, and is trying to gain access to this iPhone. However, as many iPhone users know, or most people know, it's really hard to get into an iPhone.
If it has the password lock enabled, which this iPhone 5C is actually what it is. It's like the soft blue color.
Yeah.
To be as specific as possible. I wonder how many gigabytes it is.
I don't know.
This iPhone has the passcode lock on.
And as you know, if you enter a code into an iPhone, and a certain amount, is it 10?
10.
10 times? It will lock the phone. At first for a minute, and then after that 5 minutes, I think it's exponentially. I think it grows exponentially. So if they
were... Well, it's been a while since I've used an iPhone personally.
I don't really want to lock myself out of mine, but...
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what happens.
We'll just say that it gets longer and longer and longer. And if you were to try to get into it by simply punching in the passcode, it's going to take a long time.
Also, what I've been hearing reporters say is that if you lock yourself out of the phone 10 times, it scrambles or, I guess, encrypts maybe the data, permanently erases it, in effect, the data on the device, so it's no longer accessible.
Right. So here's what we got going on. The FBI is trying to get into this iPhone, and to do that, they have to ask Apple to develop a new version of their iOS software that will allow the FBI access to this iPhone without any sort of code.
Well, it's not so simple as just to go in and just turn off the security. What they want Apple to do is they want to make a version of iOS that can update without the passcode being put in and change the passcode settings, so that this feature, locking the iPhone, is disabled. So the FBI can then go in and type in 12345, 12345, Wait, there's only four digits. Only four digits. So 12345 is an impossible password, but they'd go 1211112, you know.
Can't you go even more custom than that? I think you can.
You can, but I believe that this is set to the four-digit passcode mode. You can set either a four-digit passcode or a longer password.
I've never used anything more than the four-digit passcode, and since they implemented the finger scanner, I've pretty much strictly used that.
Yeah, when I had an iPhone, it was an older one, it didn't have the fingerprint scanner, I didn't even lock it. Which I'm not going to do that kind of thing anymore, because...
You only had it for a little while, right?
Oh, no, I had that for a year.
You just used it in between phones, yeah.
Yeah, iPhone is not my preferred method, but I have a backup iPhone.
Yeah, me too.
Lasts like half of a day, because it's old. But anyway...
Bringing it back.
So the FBI would then be able to go in and type in every possible password until they find a match, you know, with four digits and 10 possible characters.
Yeah.
It's not
a huge amount, but it's still...
It wouldn't take very long.
But the problem is that after you get locked out...
Yeah, after you get locked out, you eventually erase the data. So that's there is a security measure in effect to prevent people from doing this, from typing in as many passwords as possible. I'm curious though how the FBI would do this. I'm imagining not them doing it by hand, because you know, like all of their FBI agents would get carpal tunnel typing in the. Hold on, I'm going to crunch the numbers.
I wonder if they have like a pool going to see who can like get it, tap into it.
They're all betting
on who can...
On what number it's going to be. They have, like, an FBI lottery. And there are 10,000 possibilities in this situation. So it's not a super high-risk lottery. But, again, with only 10 tries, you have, what is it, like a 0.01 chance?
0.1% chance of getting it right in 10 tries, yeah.
Yeah, 0.01 per... 0.1?
0.1.
0.1% chance.
So it's not a great...
We paused the recording and had a mini math argument. it is 10,000 possibilities. So to type in 10,000 passwords, it wouldn't take forever if you could just keep going. But I'm wondering how they would do it. Like, would they have somebody doing it by hand? Would they have a machine with a stylus that would just go?
I think machines like that do exist.
Or do they just have a way of hacking into the phone and typing directly in?
Not sure.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not an iPhone hacker, so I would not know. Or would I?
Dun, dun, dun!
Anyway, no, I would not know. So I'm just speculating on that, whether they'd have to do it by hand or have a stylus machine or what have you. It's just kind of funny imagining like a fake finger attached to a machine typing in all the passwords. But whatever the case, it's apparently pretty easy to type in 10,000 passwords into an iPhone. You could probably do that really quickly, especially if they have some kind of list of the more common passwords first.
Yeah.
Then it's more than likely that this user had one of the more common passwords as, you know, maybe it's the top 1,000. That's a 10%. It's more than likely that he's...
And then there's always codes that relate to something personal, like people use your birthday or a major event, like a wedding or whatever it might be.
Right.
So they could go through the person's, like, database of... dates and stuff like that, birth dates, etc., and try those as well. So it's hard.
So there's a lot. There's a lot. That is the technology side of it. That is exactly what's happening. Tech-wise, is that they want to make Apple develop a software update that would automatically disable the password attempt blocking mechanism.
Yeah, and this has been commonly known as the backdoor feature.
Yes, it would essentially, in essence, even though it's technically only limiting the security features, it's not unlocking the phone for them. It's not saying, okay, well, we have Apple's not like, okay, we have the key to the phone, here it is, here's the key, you know, you get in, we'll let you in. Apple does not have the ability to open this phone on their own unless they developed a software, which the FBI could develop themselves, probably. It would just be a lot harder.
Yeah.
It would just be a lot harder. I bet a bunch of people could find a way into this phone. It's just one iPhone. Not exactly the biggest obstacle. But the thing is, Apple has their ethics. And that's, they don't want to breach those ethics and open up this phone. Even though, like, if Apple's saying if they had access to this information, they would give it to the FBI. I mean, obviously, it's a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
It's a terrorist attack. And Apple doesn't, Apple claims, and they wrote an open letter from Tim Cook, the CEO, to Apple users. It's on their website. I highly suggest you read it. Just to hear Apple's perspective directly.
It was basically just putting the security of their users first, which is really, I don't know, like, I would say honorable.
I would say it's honorable because from what I can see, from all the research I've done on this, Apple doesn't have much direct incentive. From what I can tell, it would be easiest for Apple if Apple just gave up information to the government from their users, not right. them, whenever the government asked. Mm-hmm. From what I can tell, that would probably be the easiest thing. If they just said, okay. Because then, from a PR perspective, they'd really, especially with this situation, they'd really easily be able to spin it in their favor. They'd be able to say, yes, we gave this information to the FBI because we don't support terrorism. We're against terrorism. That would be easy for them to say.
Yeah.
Very easy. But they're not doing the easy thing, and they are challenging there was a court order for Apple to give this information up to the FBI. This is not the first time this has happened. The FBI is just making a bigger deal about it and getting the court order and everything, which is referencing a late 18th century act that gives the FBI the right to do this.
1780s or something?
1780s or 1790s. The All Writs Act is what it's called, I think. I don't even know what it says, but apparently it gives the FBI some grounds to do this, and they're citing it. And, you know, there's no legislation on this, so this is all being processed and interpreted by the judicial system.
Yeah.
So Apple's going to have a big legal battle ahead of them because they're doing this.
And we're kind of in the polls. We are a nation divided on this topic.
51% of people are in favor of, quote-unquote, Apple unlocking the iPhone and giving it to the FBI.
Yep.
And 38% are in favor of them not doing so. The remainder were undecided, but this poll, the way it's worded, is kind of misleading because Apple's not talking about unlocking it. They're talking about more making a key and lock system. It's like, open this door for us. Well, this door is sealed shut. Well, develop a key and a lock for it, is basically what the FBI is saying.
And it's something that Apple never dreamed of developing a key for and never wanted to.
And the key would be easily reproducible and worth a heck of a lot of money.
If it were leaked, which hard to say what's going
to
happen.
It's hard to say. On one side, you have the potential of the FBI abusing the power of it, which is, if you trust the government to have that power, that's your valid opinion. Nothing wrong with thinking that. But the risk is not necessarily in that. The bigger risk is that this key would be worth lots of money.
Yeah.
Because it would be so easy for a hacker to use this to get into somebody's iPhone and get all manner of stuff, you know, financial information, personal information.
Whatever is on your phone.
And people oftentimes underestimate the power of the information on their phone.
Yeah.
You know, if you have Mint installed on your phone, then you have access to your bank account on your phone. Or if you have Square Cash, then people can make transactions with your phone. There's a bunch of things. Those are just specifics to what I use, but other people will have different cases. So there's lots of stuff that, with or without those things specifically, that you can access on these phones and do a lot of damage with. And some people use their phones for majorly sensitive information.
Yeah. Imagine if it were like a business phone and it's creating, if it's holding trade secrets of something like that for a corporation.
Or.
Boom.
Or even, you know, to make it an ironic potential hypothetical case, an FBI agent who has an iPhone and is trusting in the security of said iPhone to, you know, I mean, I don't know if the FBI uses iPhone for classified information. They probably don't. But, you know, lots of people use this for lots of important things, and it needs to be safe and secure. So
they have FBI phones.
Ha ha ha. So what the possibility is that hackers get their hands on this and national security would be compromised.
Yeah.
The FBI is playing this off as a balance between the opposing heads of security and personal privacy. This is not just, you're not just compromising privacy for security, like giving up your privacy to the government so the government can see what you're doing in exchange for your own security. It's not quite that simple, because you're also at the same time sacrificing some national security for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. All of the people who use iPhones, iPhone's really popular here in the States.
The thing that I don't like about the whole situation as just a whole is that we have no idea what's on this iPhone. It could be the most valuable information we've ever received about a terrorist organization, or there could literally be nothing on this iPhone. We have no idea.
I honestly think they're not going to find much if they get in.
I don't think so either.
Because they have, I'm pretty positive, they have old iCloud backups from maybe a month before the attack. One, why would somebody keep that information and leave it relatively accessible to the FBI? Why would you do that? Why would you keep that? I'm sure this person was smart enough. I mean, not to assume that this guy was a good person, because obviously he was not a good person, but
clearly if you're going to carry out an operation of this of magnitude, you're going to have an idea of what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm sure there has been some degree of a cover-up within the device. I mean, it's just common sense. So, let's move on to the effects of Apple's decision to defy this court order. You have people on Apple's side, varying from the CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, CEO of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. A bunch of people are on Apple's side.
Big and small.
From Silicon Valley. You have people like Bill Gates, who are kind of in the middle ground, not posing any absolutes in the situation, which I think is smart, because obviously we all want the FBI to get this information one way or another. It's just a matter of how. And then you have the FBI and certain political figures who suggest building a huge wall around Apple and making Apple pay for it.
I've never heard of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who would do such a thing?
Yeah, so that Donald Trump has proposed a boycott of Apple, but we're not going to talk about that. So you have a spectrum here of opinion on this. It's more simple than just a Gallup poll of 51 to 38. There are middle grounds and this and that. One of the more interesting responses to this whole situation is John McAfee, who we mentioned briefly last week, pronouncing his name wrong.
Sorry, John.
Sorry. Interestingly enough, he's also running for president. I don't know anybody who plans on voting for him, but that's a different story altogether.
I think he's the Libertarian Party or something.
Yeah, Libertarian.
Like,
he has said publicly that he and his... This man is a security expert. Mm-hmm. He and his affiliated hackers...
His team, basically.
His team.
His crew.
He says that he would eat a shoe on national television if they could not use social engineering and hacking to get into this iPhone without making Apple develop a backdoor. And he's saying that because, you know, there's a certain criteria of the type of person that would be hired by the FBI, he proposes that this filtering process in their hiring would limit the FBI's propensity to hack. Which is kind of really stereotypical. He's really stereotyping hackers in saying that they're the kind of people the FBI wouldn't hire. And he's also kind of stereotyping the FBI's the FBI's digital security experts by saying that they're not good hackers because they aren't tattooed and have 12-inch mohawks and
this and that. He's throwing some shade at the FBI.
Yeah. He's an interesting character. We're not going to go into all that. But I do like the kind of idea of what he's saying.
Yeah, that maybe somebody out there can do what needs to be done without this whole development of a new backdoor that would...
Namely,
yeah.
The FBI.
Yeah.
Really, there's probably a way the FBI could get this information. It's just that people who are in favor of this type of national security consider encryption on smartphones to be a con rather than a pro.
Uh-huh.
Suggesting that you know, their efforts would be aided if this kind of encryption wasn't even out there. There are lawmakers, I'm pretty sure even California, the state of California, is either proposing or considering or putting into law a ban on encrypted, default encrypted smartphone devices,
yes,
which would ban
that.
All iPhones in the state of California where they're
ironically,
designed.
Yeah.
Where they're designed. Used to be where they were made. That's China now. But basically, there is a lot of people in politics and in national security who want to put an end to this default encryption, because I guess the simplest explanation is just that they're tired of dealing with it, which makes sense. I mean, you spend all day trying to protect your country, and you just need to deal with this constant encryption. It makes sense why they would be against it, but at the same time, there are so many benefits to society, to users, to people in high places and in low places by this digital security, and everybody needs it. It's just like locks on your doors.
Yep.
It's just like locks on your doors.
Well said.
If the FBI needs to get into a criminal's house who has locked doors, they knock down the door. That's what they should be doing with this iPhone, finding a way to socially engineer or hack that will get into it other than this, and I'm pretty sure they're capable of it.
There's plenty of people that can do it without Apple creating whatever. God knows what the FBI needs.
And the FBI supposedly claimed they only want it to ever be used on this one iPhone, which everybody, yeah, as soon as they heard it, knew that wasn't going to happen, and it's already been revealed that that's not going to happen because...
They have a list of a dozen iPhones that they also need the same thing done to.
Yeah, and the courts have ordered Apple to do it on... Is it 12 others? 12 others? Or
I don't know if it's exactly a dozen, but it is...
It's about that... So it's already snowballing, and this is what everybody said was going to happen, and it only took a couple of days for it to start happening. This would become a common tool, and it would be a very lucrative tool.
Yeah.
So definitely a lot of potential threats to this software being developed, and because of Apple's vigilance, it will go to the Supreme Court. Tim Cook has said that they will appeal this all the way to the top, and that they're going to fight this as much as they can.
And it looks like that is going to happen now.
And it lays in the balance, and it's probably going to take a couple of years, and basically the FBI is probably not going to get it before they could figure out another way to do it. And it's more than likely that they're just going to have to find another way. Which is probably for the best. If you think differently, that's fine. Again, this is just an opinion piece. But that's all we've got for Apple and encryption. And just one note to close this off. I'm not an Apple fan. Anybody who listens to this podcast has heard me say before that I am an Android user and a Android fanboy, and I would prefer that people don't use iPhones for a number of reasons, and it's just my opinion. Mitch here has an iPhone 6S?
Nope, just a 6.
Yeah, I've got a Droid Turbo 2, which is the one that can survive a 900-foot drop.
Mine can survive a 9-inch drop.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's...
With a case.
Yeah, with a case. Without a case, it's only 6.
Yeah.
But,
Give or take.
Give or take, yeah. So, there's all sorts of things. We're going to talk about Android, some new cool things going on there, just to tie in some actual open source software to this episode. There's a new device from LG, the G5, in their G series. They've done 4 others, as you would guess.
Yeah.
Have they done 4 others? Was there ever a G1? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Google that.
LG G1. I don't know if it was actually called the G1. I see the Optimus G.
Whatever the case.
Yeah.
This is a well-established line. LG has been kind of an innovator with Android. And I say that meaning not necessarily that they make the best stuff or the best new ideas, but rather that they try the new ideas, and they sell devices using the new ideas. One of their hallmarks for a while has been the buttons on the back middle of the phone instead of on the sides. See, what ends up happening is instead of bumping your hands when you're holding the phone, you reach your index finger over the middle and control the volume buttons. And I'm pretty sure that the phones usually come without a power button. You double tap the screen to wake it up, and that mm-hmm. that and double tap to turn it off. So I don't know exactly how most of that works. I'm not an LG user, but
I think the most noticeable design change was that battery piece.
Yeah, well, we're gonna talk about the G5. I'm just giving some background.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
They also have the G Flex, which was the curve, one of the main famous curved phones. There were others, but they were one of the people who did that. And again, are these ideas the most practical? I would say no. Some people would disagree. It's subjective.
I don't know if the curved phone was necessarily functional.
Yeah.
As like a functional piece, but it was more of like, hey, look what we can do.
And it's testing the waters. So I appreciate that about LG, and they're doing another pretty cool thing with their friends, as they call it. So with the G5, they've ditched the back volume buttons. They put the volume buttons on the side. They actually adopted what the Nexus phones use, a fingerprint scanner where their buttons used to be that also doubles as a power button. So they're kind of going to other ideas in that regard, but they're still innovating. They have two cameras on the device, one regular higher megapixel camera and one lower megapixel camera that has a wide angle.
Yeah, we saw a demonstration of this wide angle lens. It's cool.
It's really cool.
It covers like this one like auditorium that they were using to like show off the phone. Mm-hmm. It covered wall to wall.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And when I first saw it, I thought, oh, this is going to be, it's a 3D camera. That's why they have two cameras, because it's going to be like, I thought, oh, it's just a 3DS camera system, which would be kind of disappointing and not innovative and not necessary at all to have a 3D camera on your phone.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody asked for that. But whatever the case, it is a unique feature. The main focus is what I said earlier, the friends. You push a button on the bottom of your phone, and it unlocks the whole bottom, which, again, features a USB-C connector, which is pretty cool. And you can take off the bottom of your phone, take out the battery, so it's an exchangeable battery, which has been uncommon lately, and I'm glad to see a major flagship device carrying that feature. And you take out the battery and you can put another battery in or whatever, this or that. Also have the ability to get these accessories. Like I saw one that was a camera holder, so it gives you more of a grip and some expanded battery.
It also has a wheel zoom
and a shutter button, and it gives you kind of a better control of the phone. It's kind of hard to describe, but there are a number of other things like a digital audio converter that you can use to have extra high fidelity audio on your phone, and a number of other features. They're also coming out with some side projects.
Yeah, we didn't. One looks like they just took a snowball and made a robot out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Sphero. They're saying that it's for.
We didn't really focus on it too much. I don't know.
Pet training or something like that? House security? I don't know. They gave it some weird description. It's basically a camera toy. They also have a VR headset.
Dude, this, yeah.
Which I don't know why. I saw a picture on
it.
It was, for
as much as they did with the phone, the headset was less than impressive, I thought.
Yeah. They're like, their whole marketing campaign is like, play by your own rules, and they have this picture of a kid holding the phone and wearing a VR headset. Maybe it wasn't a kid, I can't remember, but the VR headset, it's just super slim, which I think they wanted it to look better.
But yeah, I think that was just like
it cups around your head the same way and holds
it. No,
in
fact, there's gaps between the headset and your face, so.
Yeah, that's definitely subpar. And there's a couple other things they're introducing, but the main focus is this detachable bottom. And I don't see very many current uses for it, but I see a open design concept that can be developed and added to. And I think people are going to make some really cool things. Like, who knows, maybe a phone mount.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think their main concern was just kind of being able to use different accessories with it.
Yeah.
Like, that camera thing is cool.
Yeah, the camera thing is cool. The DAC is interesting. I don't know why anybody would necessarily need it, but I really like the idea of a detachable bottom. And it also, like I said earlier, uses USB-C, which is another, like, newer thing that I want to see being used more and more on smartphones. But lots of cool stuff. That's about all we have for today. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.